Have you ever been to a dinner party where you sensed the talk wasn't really a conversation as much as a series of monologues? First, somebody tells about their vacation, then maybe a dutiful but shallow question or two is asked. Then somebody else brags about his kid getting into medical school, which leads another guest to talk about her own college days, and on it goes, while eyes wander and heads begin to nod. You get the impression no one's really listening. Rather, they're just rehearsing what they might say. Maybe they're thinking about how to sound good or how strongly to make their points or how to outshine the others. As a result, by evening's end, everybody will have talked, but people really won't have communicated much or gotten to know each other very well. Unfortunately, many of our everyday conversations are like that too. While we hear, we only pretend to listen. Listening doesn't just mean shutting up while someone else speaks, though that's a start. As one wit said, a good listener is a good talker with a sore throat. But real listening takes more work than that. To get full appreciation of the other person and what's being said, you need to ask questions, offer responses, remain objective, figure out what's really being said and what's not being said, and observe and interpret body language. In their book, How to Communicate, Matthew McKay and Martha Davis describe listening as a commitment and a compliment. It's a commitment to understand how other people feel, how they see their world, and it's a compliment because it says to the other person, I care about what's happening to you. Your life and your experience are important to me. When we think of charismatic people, we probably think of people who talk well. We think of articulate, eloquent, highly intelligent individuals like John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., or Bill Clinton when he's really on a roll. And in the previous session, we emphasized the importance of effective public speaking. But that's only half the picture. When you want to win someone's attention and gain his or her confidence, listening is just as important as speaking. Good listening draws people to you. Poor listening causes them to drift away. Find someone with charisma, and without a doubt, you found an accomplished listener. Poor listening is an acknowledged problem between employees and bosses, salespeople and customers, children and parents, husbands and wives. Lack of effective listening also leads to lost clients, lost political campaigns, and lost causes. In short, it leads to lost opportunities of every kind. In fact, leadership is practically impossible for the person who can't listen effectively. A University of Minnesota study showed that nearly 60% of misunderstandings in the business world could be traced to poor listening, and only 1% could be traced to written communication. Moreover, people view poor listeners as self-centered, disinterested, preoccupied, and aloof. On the positive side, learning to listen better can transform relationships by making others feel appreciated and valued. After researching this issue for the last 20-plus years, I've identified several categories of listeners. As I describe them, see if you recognize yourself or anyone you know. First is the non-listener. The non-listener is someone who doesn't actually hear the speaker at all. In fact, no real effort is made to hear what the other person is saying. Indeed, it's pretty obvious that this person is not really paying any attention. Blank stares and nervous mannerisms usually greet your attempt to make a point. Sometimes this person fakes attention while thinking about unrelated matters. But before long, it's clear that his or her attention is elsewhere. Non-listeners really want to do all or most of the speaking. They constantly interrupt and think they always must have the last word. They're usually considered social bores and know-it-alls, and they're typically disliked or, at best, merely tolerated. The marginal listener hears words, but not meaning and intent. Marginal listeners can't listen closely because they're too busy thinking about what they want to say next. They're easily distracted. In fact, many marginal listeners look for outside distractions as an excuse for pulling themselves away from the conversation. Marginal listening is especially dangerous because of the enormous possibility for misunderstanding. Because of this, it's a staple of television sitcoms and film comedies. But in real life, it isn't funny. Marginal listeners are insulting to the speaker because they merely feign interest. And all sorts of embarrassments can occur because the marginal listener doesn't really hear the speaker's message. The technical listener actively tries to hear what the speaker is saying. This is the label most of us would give the so-called good listeners. More concentration and attention are required at this level. However, technical listeners still don't make an effort to understand the speaker's intent. They tend to be logical listeners, more concerned about the content than the feelings. They judge the message merely on what's said, totally ignoring the part of the message that's carried in the speaker's vocal intonation, body language, and facial expressions. They're great with semantics, facts, statistics, but poor in terms of sensitivity, empathy, and true understanding. In other words, technical listeners believe that they understand the speaker, but the speaker doesn't feel understood. And our final category, the active listener. The active listener is unquestionably at the most powerful level of listening. Active listening is also the most demanding and the most tiring. The active listener refrains from judging the speaker's message and instead focuses on understanding his or her point of view. So active listeners concentrate on the thoughts and feelings of the speaker, including what's not being said, as well as concentrating on the actual words. To listen actively means suspending your personal thoughts and feelings. It means giving attention solely to the speaker. It means sending out verbal and nonverbal feedback that tells the speaker you're absorbing what's being said. This is important. If you expect to get the speaker's support, he or she needs to know that they're being heard. To reach this highest level of listening proficiency, you need to develop 6 separate skills. I've combined them into an acronym, CARESS. CARESS. First, concentrate. Focus your attention on the speaker and only on the speaker. That will help you eliminate environmental noise and help you receive the message clearly. Second, acknowledge. When you acknowledge your speaker, you demonstrate your interest and attention. Your acknowledgement encourages the speaker and actually helps the speaker send a clearer message. Third, research and respond. Gather information about your speaker, his interests, his objectives. This will help you understand the message, will help you ask questions that prompt a more in-depth conversation, and help you respond to the speaker in a way that promotes dialogue, promotes communication. Fourth, exercise emotional control. Deal with highly charged messages in a thoughtful manner and wait until the entire message is received before reacting. Regardless of how provocative the message is, you must concentrate on understanding it first. Fifth, sense the nonverbal message. What is the speaker saying with his body language and gestures? Try to understand the vocal and visual messages as well as the words that are actually being spoken. And sixth, structure or organize the information as you receive it. This is what you should do with the time generated by the gap between speaking and hearing speeds. Typically, a person can hear 4 times faster than a person can speak. By organizing the information as you receive it, you will improve your attention and understanding of the material. Now, all 6 of these skills are important, and in a moment, we'll look at each one in more detail. As a first requirement for concentrating completely on the speaker, you must eliminate noise and distractions, including noises in the room, other people talking, poor acoustics, bad odors, extreme temperatures, an uncomfortable chair, or physical disruption such as telephone calls or visitors. Yet another barrier has to do with you, the listener, and can be either physical or psychological. Maybe it's close to lunch or quitting time, and you're preoccupied with how you feel. Maybe you're tired or hungry or angry, or maybe even have a cold or a toothache. If so, you're not going to be listening fully. So there's lots of potential distractions, internal and external. If you can't avoid them, at least try to minimize them. You do that by focusing totally on the speaker and paying attention. Now, here's some techniques that will help you concentrate while listening. Take a deep breath. This will prevent you from interrupting and will provide your brain with invigorating oxygen. Try it now. And as you're doing it, try to speak. It doesn't work very well, does it? Consciously decide to listen. No matter who's speaking, pay attention and listen for information that's particularly interesting or useful. You never know what you might learn. As showbiz wit Wilson Misner once said, a good listener is not only popular everywhere, but after a while, he knows something. Mentally paraphrase what the speaker is saying. This will prevent you from daydreaming about irrelevant and superfluous topics. You'll concentrate on the speaker instead of yourself. And maintain eye contact. Where your eyes focus, your ears follow. You're most likely to listen to what you're looking at. So, if you can't eliminate a distraction, use one or more of these techniques. Breathe deeply, decide to listen, paraphrase, and maintain eye contact. They'll help you to handle distractions. Acknowledging the speaker is a second technique of the caress model. Think about how you like to be listened to. What are the responses that you look for in other people? Here's four things most people mention. First, eye contact. This is a sign of attention. When you don't have eye contact with the listener, you may feel as if you're talking to a brick wall. Second, verbal responses and vocal participation, such as, yeah, wow, and no kidding. These show interest in what's being said. Third, use other gestures, such as smiling, nodding your head, leaning forward with interest, directly facing the speaker, and using appropriate facial expressions or body language. All of these gestures say, in effect, I'm really interested in what you have to say. Speakers like to see that. And the fourth kind of acknowledgement would be clarifying remarks that restate the speaker's point, such as, if I understand you correctly, you're saying that. Use these techniques and you'll show courtesy to the speaker. Equally important, you'll enrich yourself by joining in a give and take that increases your understanding. Researching, as the term is used here, involves asking questions and giving feedback, and it serves many purposes. For example, it allows you to clarify a message, enlarge upon a subject, and go into a particular topic in more depth. It allows you to get the speaker to change the direction of the conversation. Or it can even prompt the speaker to vent feelings of anger, excitement, enthusiasm, and so on. And it also allows you to support and reinforce particular parts of a speaker's message. J. Edgar Hoover, the former FBI director, had strong feelings on many subjects, including how internal reports were formatted. Annoyed that a certain report writer hadn't followed the guidelines, he scribbled at the top of the first page, "Watch the borders." The report with the boss's notation made the rounds. No one quite understood, but no one asked the intimidating Mr. Hoover to clarify it either. So word went out to the FBI field offices to watch the borders. And guess what? Extra agents were deployed all along the Mexican and Canadian frontiers. Only later was the truth learned. Hoover was simply objecting to the size of the margins that the writer had used on his memo. The same sort of misunderstanding is common in oral communications. Yet all it takes is a simple question to make sure that we understand clearly. For instance, studies of the Challenger space tragedy show that there may have been as many as 1,100 people who knew about the potential danger or failure of the O-ring. But either no one brought it up, or no one was listening when they did. Asking the right questions at the right time and responding appropriately to the speaker is an essential part of active listening. Skillful questioning simplifies the listener's job because it encourages the speaker to reveal hidden feelings, motives, needs, goals, and desires. Now let's speak for a moment about emotional control as an aspect of charismatic listening. What causes an emotional overreaction? It's generally prompted by the speaker himself or by something he or she says. For instance, going to an elegant party dressed inappropriately might influence the hosts negatively. On the other hand, wearing a high-powered Wall Street-like suit might put a small-town business person on the defensive in a meeting with you. As listeners, we tend to tune out when we see or hear something that we don't like. As a result, we often miss the true substance of what's being said. When an emotional reaction begins, you'll have an almost irresistible tendency to interrupt, to butt in, maybe even to argue. You may feel your pulse speed up, your breathing become more rapid, or your face become flushed. You may lose your train of thought. Once you recognize this negative emotional reaction, you can redirect it with one of the following techniques. First, pause to delay your reaction or response. It's the tried and true approach of counting to 10. This can really work to calm you down. Then, think about what you have in common with the speaker rather than focusing on your differences. Maybe you don't disagree with the person's motivations, such as raising more money for the school. Maybe you just don't agree with her solutions. The fifth component of our CARESS acronym involves sensing the nonverbal messages. Sensing focuses on the vocal and visual parts of communication. It's critical that we learn to read the nonverbal and vocal messages in our communications, the messages that we send as well as the messages that are sent to us. And the sixth and final component of our CARESS acronym involves structuring the information. This is probably the most sophisticated of the listening techniques. I found that there's three good ways to structure a message: through indexing, sequencing, and comparing. Indexing is like outlining, mentally or on paper, what the speaker says. It will dramatically increase your comprehension and recall. You note the major idea, the key points, the subpoints, and so on. Indexing is made easier by listening for transitional phrases. When people say things like, for example, or, let me elaborate on that, you know that a rationale or a subpoint or a supporting point is likely to follow. Sequencing is listening for order or priority. Sometimes, such as when you're being given instructions, the sequence is crucial. So listen for words like first, second, next, then, or last. And don't be shy about double-checking with the speaker to make sure that you understand the proper sequence or the relative weight that you should give each element. Comparing involves discriminating between what's fact and what's assumption, between advantages and disadvantages, and between positives and negatives. You also want to listen for consistency. Is what the speaker is saying now consistent with what he or she said previously? This makes you a detective of sorts. It allows you to realize when something doesn't make sense. And when it doesn't, you need to ask questions to clear up any confusion. For most of us, active listening means changing a lifetime's worth of poor listening habits. It means entering the other person's situation and trying to understand their frame of reference. Using the caress model can help you do that tremendously. Improving your listening habits is vital. That's because when I talk, I only know what I know. But when I listen, I not only know what I know, I also know what you know. In that sense, listening is power. Using the caress model can help you do that. Most of us have lots of room for improvement in our listening techniques. I encourage you to practice the methods I've just described in your very next conversation. And like anything new, they won't feel natural until you've used them a lot. But when you do, you'll definitely be on your way to improving this aspect of your charisma. Meanwhile, here are some further ideas on ways to make active listening a lot easier for you. First, listen. I mean really listen to one person for one day. Choose one person you could relate to better. Commit to listening to them, not just hearing them, for one day. After each meeting, ask yourself, did I use the caress techniques? Did I really make an effort to go beyond superficialities? Did I observe verbal and nonverbal clues? Once you've gotten into this habit of nudging yourself to listen better, extend this exercise to successive days with that same person, and then to other people as well. Listening well is a gift that you can give to others. It costs you nothing, but it may be invaluable to them. Second, create a receptive listening environment. Turn off the TV. Hold your calls. Put away your spreadsheets and silence your computer. Provide a private, quiet, comfortable setting where you sit side by side with others without distractions. Now, if that's not possible, perhaps suggest a later meeting in a more neutral, quieter environment. The point is to make your partner feel like you're there for him or her. Don't be like the boss who put a desk-sized model of a parking meter on his desk, then required employees to feed the meter, 10 cents for every 10 minutes of conversation. What kind of signal was he sending out? Third, if someone else is interrupting, avoid the temptation to reply in kind. It will just raise the level of acrimony and widen the gulf between you. Instead, be the one who shows restraint by listening to them and then quietly, calmly taking up where you left off. If you're talking, you aren't learning, President Lyndon Johnson used to say. And by showing more courtesy than the other person shows, you'll be quietly sending a message as to how you both ought to be acting. Fourth, be alert to your body language. What you do with your eyes, face, hands, arms, legs, and posture sends out signals as to whether you are or aren't listening, and whether you're understanding what the other person is saying. For example, what would you think if you noticed someone you were talking to glancing sideways, sighing, cleaning their fingernails, or fidgeting in their chair? You'd very quickly get the impression that no matter what words come from this person's mouth, he or she actually has zero interest in what you're talking about and wishes that you just go away. For similar reasons, you should abstain from judging. If you prejudge someone as shallow or ill-informed, you automatically cease paying attention to what they say. So a basic rule of listening is to judge only after you've heard and evaluated what they say. Don't jump to conclusions based on how they look or what you've heard about them or whether they're nervous or not. Next, be sensitive to emotional deaf spots. Deaf spots are words that make your mind wander or go off on a mental tangent. They automatically produce a mental barrier that impedes listening. Everybody is affected that way by certain words. For example, a speaker giving a talk to savings and loan personnel kept saying bank. To members of that industry, banks and savings and loans are very different things, and so each reference to them as bankers irritated the audience and aroused emotions that temporarily derailed their listening. So be alert to what your own deaf spots are and make adjustments. And try to find out what raises the hackles of other people, and then avoid those words so as to raise their likely level of listening. And finally, above all, create and use an active listening attitude. Learning to be an active listener is like learning to be an active jogger. It takes effort. You start little by little and work upward. It's as much a state of mind as a physical activity. Besides, as you work longer and get better, it pays ever-increasing benefits. An active listening attitude can help tremendously in breaking any poor listening habits. As a charismatic person, you must learn to appreciate the fact that listening is as powerful as speech. What someone says to you is just as critical as what you have to say to him or her. Realize that listening saves time and effort. Those who listen create fewer mistakes, fewer misunderstandings, and fewer false starts. And understand that listening is important and worthwhile to everybody. Look for the unique something that every person has to offer. By doing so, you can hugely increase your value to them and to the world as a whole, which is, after all, what charisma is all about.